Please join me in saying the Anna Bekoa. Anna Bekoa, Gedulat Shemincha, Tati Serura, Alaset Gimel Yitzchak Tzadi. Gabel Rinat Amcha Tzagveinu, Taharenu, No Ra, Kufrei Shayan, Sintet Nuns, Na Gibor, Dorshe Yehudcha, Kevava, Shamrem, Nun Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. Archem tacharem, rachamei sitkatcha, amin, gamlem, betet resh, tzadi taf gimel. Chatsin kadosh, itrov tupa, nael adatak. Tet Kuf Bet, Tet Nun Ayin. Yachid Ge'eh, Lamcha Penei, Zogrei Kedushata, Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayim Kuf. Shavateinu Kabel, Ushma Tziakateinu, Yodea, Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Taf. The letter Taf that created the planet Lavana, the moon, and the Chet that created the constellation Sartan, which is Cancer, or also the crab. And the Chet also created the month of Tammuz. I'm not going to be reading from the Zohar a verse.
The next last verse that you say, sir.
The last verse we say in a whisper. As I was saying, I'm not going to read from the Zohar as I normally do, because there is no Zohar in for this week's portion and also for next week's portion. And that's just an indication of the three-week energy, because the light needs to be concealed, and the Zohar represents the inner essence, and it represents the light, and so it needs to be concealed. So these sections are concealed. So I'm going to just start talking. Does anybody have any questions before I start? This is going to be a...
Just what, you're going to go over what we covered last week, or you're going to go over about the auras and all that stuff?
About what?
The aura. Aura and light.
We covered aura in the previous classes. I think you missed one of them, Evaristo. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, maybe. I thought I just... Okay, that's fine, that's fine.
Tonight we're starting a new subject, which is the Sefer Yetzirah. And it'll be a class of quite a few weeks. Can you hold on one second? Joe, your voice is not working properly. So please disconnect and call back, or I'll call you. Please disconnect, Joe. Bacha, can you tell him to disconnect, please? Joe, are you there? I can't hear you. Can't hear you. Please restart your computer. No, it's I have this with his bandwidth all the time. I will be starting shortly. Please forgive the delay.
It's too quiet. I am online.
Yes, you're online.
Oh,
I apologize for the delay.
Okay. That's fine. As long as I am connected, it's okay to be quiet.
We're having movement problems, but we should be starting momentarily.
All right.
You okay, Bachchan?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
You're hearing me?
Yes, I'm hearing you much better.
Okay, good.
I knew it.
Okay. So I'm starting the call. We're still having UBU problems. I'm still going to start the call. The Sefer Yetzirah is a book that has been known to be a Kabbalistic book forever, for 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years. And the whole discussion is who wrote it, when was it written, all of these academic issues. The academics tell us that Rabbi Akiva is the best guess as who wrote the Sefer Yetzirah. Every Kabbalist tells you that the Sefer Yetzirah was written by Abraham the Patriarch, who is the foremost astrologer of his generation. Abraham comes out of the area of the world where astrology either started or became very strong. Mesopotamia, Iran, Iraq, this area of the world. And in the Talmud, we have a cryptic verse that says that the Sefer Yetzirah was written by Abraham as a book of outreach for his generation. It was a book explaining how there is one God, and it's a book explaining there is the one God, and this is how you have a personal experience of that one God. So it's a book of astrology, and it's a book of meditation connecting to personal experiences of the Creator. And I am going to try and teach this book from both perspectives at the same time. To my knowledge, that's the first time it's ever been tried to do it that way. So we're going to try. If I find that it's too difficult to do that, or if you feel it's too confusing moving back and forth in those two subjects, you know, I can do it as two separate teachings. The Sefer Yetzirah, as I said, the Talmud teaches us, has 400 chapters. The Sefer Yetzirah that we have today has 6 chapters. These 6 chapters, we don't know who actually summarized and revised them, edited into the format that they have. Our best guess, as the academics have said, is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is a famous rabbi, of course. He is Rabbi Akiva is famous for being one of the 4 people.
I finally got it connected.
Joe, mute your phone. I can hear you. You're disturbing us. Mute your microphone.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sorry for the interrupting. It's the 3-week period. I can see this is going well. Okay. So the Sefer Yetzirah, Rabbi Akiva, besides being a famous person, is famous for connecting to the 4 levels of Torah. And he is famous for going into heaven with 3 other sages of his generation. And going into the garden, as it is said, and only he came out in peace. The one died in the sense that he chose not to come back. One came back as a heretic. And one came back but I've forgotten how he came back. But it is a very famous story from the Talmud, and it's quoted many times in many places. So Rabbi Akiva is probably the person who took what was left of the Sefer Yetzirah and edited it into what we have today. Now, the best English translation of the Sefer Yetzirah is probably, or the most well-known, if not the best translation, because it also includes extensive commentary. And that's the one by Rabbi Arya Kaplan. When I read that book, I was overwhelmed. It was just so much information, so powerful, just amazing material. But there was something missing, is what I felt. I couldn't put my hand on it, what it was, but there was something missing. And then it was later when I attended a course in the Sefer Yetzirah by one of my teachers that he made it very clear. Rabbi Kaplan was not a practicing Kabbalist. He was knowledgeable, but he was not a practicing Kabbalist. And he therefore didn't do it as an experiential expression. He did it as an academic, and that's what I felt was missing. In the book, the session that I followed, that I attended, my teacher used a book called Or Yashar, or which is the straight light. And it is a Hebrew book that is the commentary by the Ramak, Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, whose yahrzeit was last night and today. Rabbi Cordovero's commentary on the Sefer Yetzirah is titled the Or Yakar. And that is where I will be coming from with my commentary, with my discussion. You're welcome to utilize Arya Kaplan's Sefer Yetzirah. It's very effective, but you'll be seeing differences between the two books, so I want you to understand that. The Sefer Yetzirah has been written about as early as the Gemara, as early as the Mishnah. The Sefer Yetzirah was codified by Rabbi Akiva about the time of the Mishnah, although Rabbi Akiva was, is part of the Talmud, spoken of in the Talmud. Most of the Talmud was written after he passed. In the Gemara, which around 300 of the Common Era, there is a, it is commented on the Hilchot Yetzirah, the laws of the creation. And it's talking about the Sefer Yetzirah. Now, typically, in our modern age, Kabbalah is talked about in three different ways. One is called the theoretical Kabbalah, and that's the academic Kabbalah. The other is called the magical Kabbalah, and that is all of the segulot and the magic and the various protection tools that people have been promoting over the centuries. And it's the Ari and Rabbi Chaim Vital is very clear we're to stay away from the magic as much as possible. Even though Rabbi Chaim Vital was very much involved with the magic and the segulot, it is recommended to stay away from it by him and in his writings. The third category of Kabbalah, called the prophetic Kabbalah, comes through primarily Rabbi Abulafia. But all three of those categories are modern categories. They're not the categories that the Ramak was dealing with. It's a totally different structure. The structure he was dealing with is spoken of in the Talmud. And I'm sorry to give you this background in a cold way. It's really amazing material. But we'll get to the book tonight, and I think you'll find some amazing teachings in it. The three categories of Kabbalah is referred to in the Talmud in the section of Hagigah. And it's a very famous section. And a lot of people read it and think they understand it, but they really don't. The section basically, and I'm paraphrasing, it says, do not teach the sexual mores to more than two people. Do not teach the Ma'aseh Bereshit, the section on creation, to more than one person. And do not teach Ma'aseh Merkava, the study of the chariot, to more than one person, and that person must know on his own what is correct. When you hear that kind of approach, what are they talking about? And this is the Kabbalah. This is what the Sefer Yetzirah was designed by Abraham to speak to people about. The three areas, the sexual mores, are the famous parts of Leviticus, where it specifies, don't sleep with your mother, don't sleep with your father, don't sleep with this person, don't sleep with your aunt and your sister, don't lie with a man like you would a woman, and there are many other not to do sexually. And everybody reads the Torah literally, God forbid, and they don't understand that what they're talking about is the relationships between Sephirot. Another section is called the Bereshit section, Maaseh Bereshit. And what that is dealing with has to do with creation itself, the laws of creation, how it works. Maaseh Bereshit is a meditative technique. It also, since it's dealing with creation, deals with astrology. But then the third section of Maaseh Merkava, the chariot, comes from various prophets in how they perceived the Creator and how they interacted with the Creator. But these three sections is really the way Kabbalah has always been partitioned. The meditative techniques of Bereshit and the meditative techniques of the Merkava work in each other's backyard. But the meditative techniques of the Merkava are much more individual. Most meditative techniques don't even approach these levels, but if they do, they rarely get to the level of connection associated with the Merkava. And we'll talk about that over the coming weeks. The Sefer Yetzirah . If anybody on the telephone has the Sefer Yetzirah in English, please let me know.
Zorik, I have Kaplan's in English.
Okay, would you read the first section for us?
Yes. Are you talking about 1:1?
Yes.
Okay, I gotta get to it here. Do you want me? With 32 mystical paths of wisdom from there, that point?
Yes, please read that section.
Okay, with the 32 mystical paths of wisdom engraved Yah, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, the living God, the King of the universe, El Shaddai, merciful and gracious, high and exalted, dwelling in eternity, whose name is holy. He is lofty and holy, and he created his universe with three books, Sepharim, with the text Sefer, and with number Sefar, and with communication Sipur.
Thank you, Chris. Now, I'm going to read it, but give me a second to find it in my notes. Anybody on Ubu to please mute your microphone because you're coming through. Thank you. I'm looking for in my notes this section, because the Or Yachar, that book, really has much less words in that verse. And the way the translation of the verse from the Or Yachar is 32 wondrous paths of wisdom did Yah, Hashem, engrave this world with three books, the Sefer, Sefer, and Sefer. As you can see, it is significantly shorter than the book from the verse from Rabbi Kaplan. It leaves out all of the different names of God associated with the Sefirot. And as you read the Kaplan commentary, you'll see a whole different range of what is discussed within that. Excuse me. The first thing I'd like to point out is that the Sefer Yetzirah starts with the first letter Bet, just like the Torah. And that there's many, many commentaries on the Torah as why it starts with the first letter Bet. But the real question when you talk about the letter Bet, where is the Aleph, which is the first letter of the alphabet? And there are a lot of commentaries, as I mentioned. But the real understanding that needs to be part of the meditative process is whenever you go to say a letter or a word, to say bet, you have to breathe in. You can't hear me, but that's the Aleph. That's the air of the Aleph that has no sound. What you breathe in is before you breathe out. When you breathe out is when you form words. That is why the Sefer Yetzirah and the Torah, which is also a meditative tool, start with the letter Bet. There are 32 wondrous paths. Since the first letter is the Bet, Bet as a prefix on a word can mean with or in. So, what was created? With 32 paths of wisdom or in 32 paths of wisdom? And those are very much different concepts. And the Ramak asks that and has that part of his commentary, which I will discuss at another time. I'm just kind of giving you an overview. Now, the astrological side, well, let me get stay with the meditative side for a few minutes. 32 paths, what are the 32 paths? And it's a famous, everybody knows, the 32 paths are the 10 Sefirot and the 22 letters, total 32. But when we go over to the astrological side, 32 wondrous paths. What are the 32 astrological influences? Well, we know there are 12 astrological zodiac signs. That leaves us 20 short. The astrological influences which are not really followed in Western or even Eastern astrology. Sorry for the interruption. The astrological influences that aren't followed in Western or Eastern astrology. There are 20 additional groups of stars, physical items. The Pleiades group is one example. In the Talmud, it tells us that in the Pleiades group, there are X number of stars. Now, how could they know that? And scientifically, they've now agreed with the Talmud on that. Yes, the sort of the Pleiades. There's the other areas in Western astrology, the thing of fortune, the moon's node. There are 20 other items that influence us. There are 32 paths, wondrous paths.
No, I'm trying to get it.
Now, the idea of the paths is something that we need to talk about extensively. There are two Hebrew words that mean path. One is derek, and one is nativ. Derek is not the word that the Sefer Yetzirah used.
I got it on.
I'm going to have to put people on the conference call as well, so because the side conversations are being heard.
Oh, I have. Hold on.
If you want to ask a question, you can dial *6 and you'll be able to be heard. Okay, derek is a word in Hebrew that means public path. It's your normal roadway. One of the famous Talmudic dictums, derek eretz, precedes Torah. The way of the land precedes Torah. It means be polite. Follow the customs of the people around you. Even if the halakha is one way and you're going against the halakha, if the area, the people that you're with, are telling you otherwise, follow their path, because derek eretz precedes Torah. Derek means path. It means a public path, a path that everybody can follow. That is not the word that the Sefer Yetzirah uses. Why not? And that's because the meditative process is an individual process. The meditative process is not oriented to public use. It's small groups at best. Nativ is that exactly the idea of path, but for a private path, for an individual, for a small group. The Sefer Yetzirah is telling us, with 32 wondrous paths, was the world created. With 32 wondrous paths, was the names engraved. And the final part of that session, and he created his universe by three signs. Rabbi Kaplan translates those three as book, number, and story. Here's another one that says by border, by letter, and by number. Nobody knows what these words mean. Their translations are very cryptic. They're translated from the frame of meditation, by my teacher in the way of book, story, and storyteller. In the way of astrology, they're transferred, they're described, the meaning has to do with border, letter, and number. That's the astrological discussion. What are the borders? Astrologically, our borders are the 12 zodiac signs, and the other 20 elements are within those borders. Letters have to do with the routes within the tree, because astrologically, all of the planets and all of the astrological signs relate to the tree of life. And of course, number, every letter relates to a number. But in the Torah itself, we take three different censuses of the Jewish people. And we do it by tribe. And we have different numbers, 80,000, 20,000, 33,500. These are the population of the various tribes. Those numbers are the amount of stars that are in the astrological constellations. Go prove it, of course, is a whole different discussion. You know, we'll talk about that in a while, perhaps. Now, astrologically, the Sefer Yetzirah relates to the 12 astrological signs of the zodiac, and it also relates to the 12 tribes. When the Torah talks about the order of marching in the desert, when it talks about who's on the west, who's on the north, who's on the south and the east, astrologically it's talking about the relationship of the astrological signs. Meditatively, it's related, those directions meditatively relate to the tree of life, but they also are a meditative tool. If you are meditating facing the south or facing the east, you're going to be meditating in a different direction, in a different place, where you go and how you interact with the beings that you meet will be different based on the orientation of your body. Returning to the meditative side, what is a sephirah is something that takes a lot of understanding. A sephirah is a level of consciousness, human consciousness. There are other beings who live within the frame of the sephirot. They are all creations of the Creator for our purpose, to assist us as human beings. Human beings were created to rise above being human, to become divine. We were created to rise above the level of the angels, and each sephirah has its own level of angel. Human beings are designed and created to have levels of consciousness on more than one level at a time. That is not possible for an angel. We don't do that. Most human beings, and even people who meditate consistently, don't do that. we have to learn how to do that. And the meditative techniques that are taught within the Sefer Yetzirah start to expand our consciousness to be able to do that. Astrologically, how did the Sephiroth relate to the astrology? There are 10 planets in this solar system. This is just one level of the astrology. Most people will say there's only 9. Does somebody want to ask a question? Most people will say there's only 9 planets in the solar system, so let's number them. You have Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Venus, Mercury, the Sun, that's a total of 8. The Moon, that's the 9th. Or did I miscount?
Moon is not a planet.
According to science, the Moon is not a planet. According to astrology and its influence on human beings, the Moon is a planet. Let me go back through because I want to make sure my count is right. Pluto, Neptune, Uranus, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Venus, Mercury, the Sun, and the Moon. There are 10 planets, not counting the Earth. Let's say the Earth and the Moon are one in that context, but they're not. Why? Right now, science is going through an issue of whether Pluto is a planet or not. And they've recently determined that Pluto is not a planet because it does not meet the minimum size requirement. Yet, the Kabbalists have had an argument, a machloket for the sake of heaven, which is a dispute looking to find truth. Their argument is Keter a Sephirah, or is it light? Is it a vessel, or is it fulfillment? And there is a dispute. There's a disagreement whether it's one or the other, just as there is a disagreement whether Pluto is a planet or not. This is just human beings following the process of the Sephiroth. Keter is light, is fulfillment. Pluto is not a planet. What is the 10th planet? It's the asteroid belt. This is all part of what's built into the discussion in the Sefer Yetzirah as we go forward. Now, the next word, or one of the words that's in the Sefer Yetzirah, it talks in terms of engraving. Hakak is the Hebrew word. What is the idea of engraving? How does that relate to the meditative issues? Engraving implies that I take something out of in order to create a picture. I take material out. That's what engraving is. Another way of looking at that is that I have to go inside to see where I'm going. Meditation is never going out. It's not astronomy. It's not looking out at the stars. It's looking in at ourselves. There is a commentary on the Sefer Yetzirah by Shabtai Donelow, and that commentary is an amazing commentary because it ties the meditative to the astrological. But literally, Shabtai Donelow describes the weather on each and every planet. And he does so, not that he visited it, and that weather pattern that he describes has been confirmed by NASA in their probes of the solar system. The weather pattern he describes is based on his meditations, where he went into his own body and discovered or revealed aspects of the Sephirot. And if you know the aspects of the Sephirot, then you know aspects of the astrology. You know what the weather is from the weather in your body. Both parts were built from the Sephirot and in the creative process that the Tree of Life represents. A limb that is related to a Sephirah is also related to the planet that relates to that Sephirah. And so we need to understand meditation and astrology being tied together by what component, what Sephirah built, created those entities. There's one other discussion point that probably will get everybody crazy. And that's that the rational part of Judaism, which is based on the Rambam, teaches that every astrological item has a soul. The Torah teaches, the Kabbalah teaches, that those souls came from human beings who reached their tikkun and their correction in the previous creation. There are 74 generations before Adam. There were human beings who reached their correction, and by so doing were rewarded by being given a planet, a galaxy, a series of galaxies. They were given these entities, these essences, these bodies, in order to now work and serve Hashem. There is a concept called Shefa within Kabbalah, the flow of the beneficence of God through the 32 wondrous paths of wisdom. That flow is what astrological influence is all about. And astrology, as we know, is a science. Astrology works. That's counter to the normal Western view of astrology, but it does work. There is a difference between Western astrology and Hebrew astrology. The major difference is Hebrew astrology is concerned with assisting the human being knowing what is his correction, in assisting the human being in being moved into situations where he can achieve his correction by doing the right action. But free choice is never taken away from him. In Western astrology, while the discussion is that there is free choice, and the astrologer should never take it away, in fact, the way it's done, it's based on predetermination. Hebrew astrology does not look at predetermination. Astrology teaches what will be. Through meditative techniques, we can reach a point where I can see a different frame of reference, a different reality. And I can even change that reality to what I want it to be. And then I can bring that reality down into my world, into this world. And that is why Abraham presented it as this book of outreach. Learn that there is one God. Follow these techniques and create the world that you want to be in. That is what we will be teaching. An effect of this is the concept of building a golem. We know that a golem is just a clump of clay that supposedly protects people. There are known Kabbalists who create golems. Some golems is Friday night supper when they didn't have enough money. Some golems were people that protected other people. The golem has been throughout history. The Sefer Yetzirah is the technique to create a golem. It is related to astrology as much as it's related to meditation. It's related to the letters, the Hebrew letters, as much as anything else. I want to be very clear. I am not teaching, nor am I capable of teaching people to create the world the way they want it, to create golems. The techniques are there in the Sefer Yetzirah, but when you finish this course, you more than likely will not be able to manifest it because it takes practice. And it takes a level of living that we call holiness. It takes a level of purity that most people in our world are not capable of obtaining. But the more you learn of these techniques, the more it will help you in your life. And that's the reason that we're teaching this. We're out of time. Does anybody have any questions before we hang up?
Yes, I do. My question is about the dinner. So you're saying that one result of manifestation, similar to the golem, is that you could manifest food.
There are known documented situations in Israel where certain rabbis every Friday night created their dinner. They did not buy a cow. They created their dinner, which tasted like cow.
This would be like manna.
We wouldn't call it manna because manna we know is something else. I'm not sure that you're able to hear me on the conference call, this discussion, so Bob has asked a question about the people who have created dinner for Friday night, and he's asking the question about, and he made the comment that it sounds like manna, and I was just explaining that it's not manna, because manna is something else, but what it's saying is that we can manifest mind over matter.
Okay.
we can manifest everything in our world the way we want it to be. All of that is capable and available. We have to understand how that works. That is called Sitrei Torah, the secrets of the Torah. A person who's given the knowledge to make that work, and it's all in the Sefer Yetzirah, a person who's given that knowledge and then allowed to make it work is someone who's reached a level of consciousness where he knows why he is hurting other people with his own desires, where he knows where he is hurting other entities, the ecology of the world based on his actions. His consciousness includes the totality of these things, and therefore he is allowed to manifest the changes in his world. Did I answer your question, Bob?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Let me open up the conference call so you guys can ask questions in case.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I have a question. Okay, now there is this knowledge that you are supposed to know but don't use, or you have these abilities that were given to you, but not as a saint, not as a holy person. So where we miss here the right pieces on the puzzle? Do we need to know? Do we got these abilities to use them? If we cannot use them because we are not holy, then why we need to know them?
Maybe by learning them in that process, you'll choose to become holy. Or maybe it's just an exercise in futility. There's no promises being made here. But I will address one issue. The study of Kabbalah is designed to allow you to grow to a level where you can have a chaos-free life. How you achieve that chaos-free life, this meditative technique, astrological techniques are designed and are meant to assist you in achieving that. Have I answered
your question? But it's like asking you, hang on, put your white suit and your best shoes and go play in the forest and don't come back with dirt on your white suit, because then I gonna discredit you or dishonor you or whatever, something mean and ugly, just because you never took good care of your suit. So I am making it hard for you, or is that a something that you, a challenge that you're willing to take, or why is all these difficulties and so hard to get something that is out there? I don't know. It's hard for me to explain, but it's like that makes things everything so complicated, so confusing, so hard to get. I say, okay, I'm willing to work hard to get it, but then we are surrounded by all these negative energies everywhere, mean people, ugly people, bad people falling from the skies, bad people coming out of the ground. Everything, everywhere you go, you always face with somebody who is ugly and bad. And we cannot be kind and gentle to these people, or they're just going to keep chewing us up. So now the question is, again, I am asking you, Hanok, put your white suit and go play in the forest and bring me a pig and make sure you don't get dirty. Do you think, can that be possible?
Absolutely. You have to go into the mud in order to do your spiritual work. But when you come out of the mud, mind over matter makes all the dust disappear. and you walk in with a freshly pressed suit. Why is your suit dirty, Evaristo? Because you don't care enough to clean it.
No, because you're going to be crashing everywhere, bumping with dirty people, falling on the map, hitting a branch, or, you know, hypothetically, you are walking non-leave, and then, boom, something happens to you without asking for it.
Evaristo.
Yes.
Please. I do understand your question. And you had you got this information in a previous course about Kabbalah. You create those negative people. They come into your life to teach you a lesson, to allow you to cleanse a tikkun, a correction with them. You've created them, you have to deal with them. And as soon as you do, they disappear. But you have to learn the tools. And you have to practice with the tools. And you have to manifest the tools in your life. Kabbalah can be learned academically. And many people do. They get paid to go to school. They get paid to be professors of Kabbalah. Ultimately, Kabbalah is meant to be used in your life. Every tool that I teach in the basic class, in this class, in any class, those tools are designed to assist you. Those tools are designed to help you grow spiritually. And anytime you see someone outside of yourself as a problem, look at your hand, because you're pointing away from yourself. Three fingers are pointing back. One's pointing out, three's pointing back, and one, your thumb, is pointing to God. Recognize the person who is coming out of the ground dirty, whether it's a spiritual entity or a human being you created to come into your life for the purposes of tikkun, of correction. And every time you don't do the correction, the universe says, great, no problem. We're going to bring you astrologically influenced to another place where that person will come again. Won't be the same body, won't necessarily be the same lifetime, but you're going to face that person again until you get it right. There's just one problem. Each time you're given a chance, the next time is a little bit harder. So use the tools now. Study the tools now. Take them into your life. That's the purpose of this class. That's the purpose of all of my teaching. I shouldn't have even said my teaching, because I don't teach my teaching. I teach Kabbalah.
Question.
Bob has a question.
So I think Evaristo, my friend Evaristo's question was a good one for American. I can come up with a lot of sub questions for it. But he talked about using our gifts to go after something that leaves us dirty. And so my question about that is, will we always be dirty as long as we try to go after something and put that above the practice of being clean? Should we phrase it different ways? And more important for us is to learn how to stay clean than to go get a big.
The answer to the question is, we were created as desires to receive. That means we want things. And the Creator created fulfillment of those desires. He wants to give us those good things that we want. What we have done is, with the sin of Adam, with the eating of the fruit from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, we have lowered ourselves into the mud so that when we want, we have wanted it for ourselves. We need to learn to change that, to want it in order to share with others. They're not different. Being in the mud is the same as being clean. The difference is the consciousness. Being in the mud means I want it for myself. Being clean means I want it in order to share. Got to practice that. You got to implement that in your life. And therefore, what you want will come to you in a clean way, or it will come to you with the mud and give you more chaos. The choice is yours. Understand the system and how it works. Once you understand the system, it becomes a no-brainer question. I'm going to be clean because that way I get what I want. I want to be dirty. I want to get it also, but it's not going to stay with me, and it's going to come back at me with chaos. This is the system. Are there any questions? I invite you to use a tool Thursday night at 10 p.m. L.A. time. That tool is Joseph HaSadiq, Joseph the Righteous, a Sadiq who left the world during this three-week period in order to help us, assist us during and through this three-week period. The more we learn about him, the more we study about him, the better that tool becomes. He wants us to use him as a tool. The more you learn about him, the more you'll understand that. On Saturday night at 10 p.m. L.A. time, you have the same issue, only the man, the Sadiq's name is Rashi, the Jewish foremost commentator on all of the writings, Jewish writings. And we'll be starting our second class at 7 p.m. next Monday. Any other questions? Have a beautiful day, beautiful evening.
And bye, everyone. Bye, Hanok.
Take care, Evaristo. And
bye.
Please, one last comment is please use the tool of the meditations for this period.
Okay.
Bye-bye.